welcome to another episode of Ordinary Old Catholic Me. So if I have a title for today's show, it's Whither Goest the Synod? Will somebody help me? I had intended to make the subject of today's podcast a discussion about and around a book I read this last week and how it played into my ordinary thoughts as an ordinary Catholic. A tiny preview of where I hope to go maybe next week in the episode is that it is based on a memoir written by Dr. Irving Yalom, an existential psychiatrist, and the book's name is called Becoming Myself. There was a period of about 5 years in my life while I was working as an ethics attorney that I was also studying ever so slowly to be a psychotherapist because I was doing it at night. And one of the first books assigned to me in my first class, which was a group therapy class, was Dr. Yalom's book on groups. After that, I read a great deal of his fiction and his nonfiction. He doesn't believe in God. He believes, and his work follows the pattern, he's still alive at age 90, though I'm being a little simplistic in this sentence, is that, as typical of the atheistic type existentialist, that human beings are thrown into the world, it's completely random, it has no meaning, and the only way for there to be meaning is for human beings to make their own meaning. And that's the existentialist mantra, as I understand it. So, thrown into the world, us poor things, it's meaningless. Morality is not objective. While that is the case, and there are no absolutes, still, we have responsibility for how we choose to live. Well, that's some of it. I wanted to talk about the memoir and to interject my own questions, if you will, about whether this wonderful man, wonderful writer, much smarter than me, whether that does entirely make sense in his absolute, as it were, a rejection of faith in the existential world of non-absolutes. But something else was rummaging in the events of the day, and in this case, specifically in the Catholic world, and that got in the way. The working document is called Instrumentum Laboris. It was released by the Vatican last Tuesday. Let me begin with this statement about myself. I find pretty much every teaching of the Church difficult. Although not entirely for that reason, I left the Church for many years because I found one or more teachings difficult. So difficult that I felt I could never adhere. And then my view was that if I could not adhere, it was I who had the problem, the issue, not the Church. There have been many times in which I've sinned because I have not lived up to those teachings. It is not unlikely that I will do so again, if indeed those teachings are, as I believe, are unchangeable. But the question that the Synod working document raises for me and for others is, are they changeable? I found out that the report had come out when I happened to see a video podcast by Irish podcaster Robert Nugent. I pulled up the report. I admit I don't know what it is about the synod language, but I find it dense doublespeak. I just don't understand it. It's bureaucratic in its linguisticness, if you will. So I then went to some articles about its substance. There were highlighted portions which re-emphasized points made when the listening sessions were on, in which I actually participated, about those who did not feel welcome in the Church. In particular, in the working document, three groups are mentioned: the divorced and civilly remarried, the polygamous, which I think Robert Nugent mentioned, seems to be mentioned twice, and the gay community. Now, this is not news, and maybe it's not news in this sexually obsessed society that the area of feeling unwelcome is largely related to sexuality. You do have the issue of women priests and married priests, but those two are more doctrine than dogma, though to me they also relate to sexual roles and disciplines. Mr. Nugent, his podcast, by the way, is called De Crevy Determined to Be Catholic, and I like it very much. Mr. Nugent played a response to a question at a conference related to the document as to how the church's teaching played into the concern about the whole synod process. And if I understood Cardinal Hollerich's response to a question on this subject, it was about what, how does this coincide with the teachings of the church? And this is the quote that came from Cardinal Hollerich, and it was, "We do not speak about the church's teaching. That is not our task." Now, what Mr. Nugent did, so that it didn't seem like it was an out-of-context statement, he played before and after the actual statement. And it still floored Mr. Nugent, and it kind of floored me, and maybe not for the same reason. My initial reaction, I will admit, was anger, really. Yep, potentially sinful anger. Because my first reaction was a selfish one. What the heck have I been doing all my life, trying, believing that this was my task on earth to follow the church's teaching so that I might be with God at the end of my life? I did stop myself in my anger a bit, and remember, I've been saying for the last several weeks I've been in a mood. I remembered two parables. One was the one about the prodigal son, and the other was about the workers in the vineyard. In the first, the younger son of a father decides precipitously that he wants his inheritance before his father has died. He's going to not delay his gratification. And off he goes, having insulted his father, with his portion of funds to go to a far city to live a life of carousing and debauchery. He ends up with nothing and has to work with swine just to make a dime, or whatever they called them in those days. And then one day he realizes, hey, my father's servants are probably eating better than I am. I'll go home, I'll beg my father's forgiveness, and I'll become one of the servants. And off he goes, and his father sees him in the distance, and he tells the servants not only that he's going to welcome him, but to prepare the fatted calf. And he gives a feast for the prodigal, for that bad boy. Now, the older brother is incensed. Hey, wait a minute. I've been doing everything I'm told. I've been the good guy. I've listened to you. I've worked for you. And you haven't given me anything nearly as fine. And then there's the parable about the vineyard workers, most of whom came to work for very specific wages early in the day. But later in day, other workers come along and they get paid the exact same amount at the end of the workday. Hold the phone. What are you talking about? That's not fair. So that was my human nature response. I gotta admit it. Now, what another of the cardinals tried to do in the same clip was to clarify that first you welcome and you walk with the people, the persons who feel unwelcome. And I assume then that the next stage would be that the person will at some point have a change of heart. We need to meet the person where he or she is. Yes, absolutely. I need to be met where I am. Now, this cardinal mentioned Zacchaeus, the tax collector, who, though he was a man who was not only considered sinful, but he was also hated by his fellow human beings. So he was still so interested to see Jesus that he climbed a tree to see over the crowds. And yes, Jesus welcomed him, and that led to a change of heart. But unless I miss something in Jesus's teaching, that change of heart was a necessity for Zacchaeus to follow Jesus and all that meant after Zacchaeus was welcomed. What you can't help but hear in this, we do not speak about the church's teaching, is something a little more troubling. If the cardinal had said, "We do not yet speak about the church's teaching," maybe I'd be less troubled. Maybe it was the translation to English. But I'm also not seeing it in the writing about the reports, in the synodal language. I'm not seeing anything of the essence of the faith and its transmission. What I seem to be seeing, and I'm happy to be corrected, is that the change is expected to come from the church and not from the person seeking to be welcomed. Am I missing something? I could be. The goal, we are told, is to create space to welcome all. That is great. But don't we do that already? Haven't we always welcomed all? How long do you separate the welcome from the teaching? And can you in the first instance? In this circumstance, doesn't at some point welcoming have to be in the context of the teachings? Why become a Catholic if it is not the teachings that draw you and the centrality of the Eucharist? Why return to the faith at all if it's not the teachings that draw you? More than that, the whole purpose of entering and remaining in the church is the idea that your whole existence on this earth is to obey God and get back to Him, to praise, reverence, and obey God and get back to Him. What I have often repeated in this podcast, the old Baltimore Catechism, the statement is that God created us to love Him, to know Him, and to serve Him in this life so that we may be with Him in the next. The Church indeed makes room for all of us, as long as we recognize our sinful natures. Jesus welcomes us all indeed, but always with the concomitant, "Go and sin no more." I'm not hearing that we who sin, and that's all of us, and are being walked with in the synod, are actually seeking to change. What I'm hearing, and show me where that's not the case in the documentation, is that accommodation will be made in the teachings for those who are being walked with. Or I'm hearing it implicitly, and it seems to be there implicitly because it would be easy enough to clarify, and that's not happening. And I got to tell you, I could have used a lot of accommodation. I still could use a lot of accommodation as a single person. Were the demands of the church, which purportedly are still extant, the demands of the Lord, are they unwelcoming? Are these precepts, if you will, are they man-made or are they God-made, implemented by man? That's a key question because presumably they are divinely inspired. They are the teachings of Jesus Christ. And yet there seems to be some question being posed somewhere in this morass of words. We need to define terms, and that has never really happened, in my view, in this synodal process. What do people mean by unwelcome? What does it mean for the church to walk with us? Every day, I struggle with being a single, unmarried woman, quite a bit less now than in my youth, now that I'm in my dotage, but it was a darn hard struggle when I was younger. That's what confession was for, with the expectation of God, I thought, I still think, that I repented and that I resolved to sin no more. My understanding is that the church walks with me and we both understand that I learn and follow the teachings, which are the teachings of Jesus Christ. And so what I'm sensing and what the synod seems to be agreeing with is that in this society, which no longer has a consensus on morality, people do not feel welcome because they not only want, but expect the teachings to change. And while no one is saying that they will change, the not saying that they won't change causes this powerful confusion. And any broaching of change from the individual is considered improper and offensive. In other words, to say that maybe the church's teachings are mighty fine as they are gets a lot of, oh my gosh, you can't really say that. That the change is required from the church is what's being asked for and what is required. And that you're being insensitive if you say, wait a minute, let's talk about that. And that raises the other issue, is that we keep hearing about dialogue, but it doesn't seem to be very much a dialogue. It seems to be some kind of pronouncement, albeit one used in very ambiguous language. And I want to go back, that there seems to be a bit of a fallacy, again, that we are now making a space to welcome all, as if that hasn't been there in the first instance. I understand at some level, because I grew up in a time when the church's teachings were expressed in a way that pretty much said that I was in danger of hell all the time. My soul was a bottle of milk that was blackened by my sin. That was a time where the idea of our abiding by church teachings was more about avoiding hell than seeking heaven. Now we seem to be in the absolute opposite direction. Let's pose a hypothetical. A person's in a polygamous relationship and has an interest in the Catholic Church. I know that the person has to be met where he or she is. I'd expect the same, with compassion and with kindness. But first, I'll be honest, I'd get this problem out of my bailiwick so fast and into a priest slap, you'd feel the breeze. And as I'm neither pastor nor theologian, that's where it would be most appropriate. But for the sake of this discussion, let's pretend I could go further. I'd want to find out what makes the person interested in being a Catholic in the first instance. And certainly it would not be the approach to announce, well, you are in a polygamous relationship and you're out of luck. That would be unwelcoming indeed. I would want to find out a little more about this polygamous relationship, its duration, its present status. I have heard tell that when it comes with the typical situation where a couple comes to the priest to get married, for example, and they have been living up to here in conjugal bliss without benefit of marriage, that the priest, assuming people are ready to hear this, are encouraged to live without that sexual relationship, to basically stop doing what is in Catholic teaching a sin, in order to set the stage for further preparation for marriage and its attendant rites and obligations and reflection of the Trinity. So, in this polygamous situation I'm going back to, the idea would be to explore whether the parties, and you'd have to ask the question, are all the parties interested in being Catholic? What if one is and one is not? Are they prepared to stop having the polygamous relationship? At some point, somebody has to fish or cut bait, no matter how slowly and compassionately has been the presentation and the patience. If we don't make clear what welcome looks like on the church's side of things, on Jesus's side of things, as he is the church and its teachings, and what it looks like on the side of those who claim the church is unwelcoming, we're going to be at an impasse, or there's going to be change in the unchangeable, and that's going to set up a whole other kettle of fish. In those parables, it is true that I am, for the purposes of this discussion, the older brother. In other contexts, I'm often the prodigal son. That I get a little razzled and feel pretty marginalized myself over the ambiguity. Is there anything expected of the other in order for he or she to feel welcome? Is it any longer expected of me or my fellow Catholics? Or is there a double standard, either intentional or implicit? Who is journeying with me as I daily struggle to embrace the cross that is not only daily life, but the disciplines of the church? If we don't speak about the teachings in the synod, are we in danger of dispensing with obedience to God? Or are we somehow saying that those aspects which people find unwelcoming are properly dispensed with? Is it not possible to convey that all are welcome, but this or that is considered a sin, and you will always be welcome to stay, but you cannot fully avail yourself of all the fruits of the church as long as you or I stubbornly refuse to obey the laws of God. The thing that seems to get forgotten whenever Jesus is portrayed as being with sinners, dining and sitting with sinners, and, you know, basically showing the greatest of warmth and welcome, is that always in his statement is, follow me and don't sin anymore. And he was pretty clear about what those sins were, and they're not invented by the later church. Well, you might still say, well, what makes you think that those are the laws of God? Well, there is Jesus's statements, then there is the Bible, the New Testament, and the Old. Then there are the church fathers, there's the magisterium, there's tradition. Are they or are they not the teachings of Christ? Come, follow me is a very hard saying, one of the hardest. People walked away from Christ because his welcome included joining him on a very hard path. If welcome means Catholic Church, you have to change the rules to conform to my life. That's a problem. And the thing that's crazy-making, not only in our regular society, our secular society, but in the church, is that, again, those definitions of terms are simply not provided. So we're all guessing as to what you really mean, what the church really means. If I were that 16-year-old I was all those years ago, and I were living through all of this now, it would feel very much like the inconsistencies of those days that sort of pushed me out, that made me say, well, wait a minute, here it was this way for centuries, and now we're told that none of that is true. And you say, no, you weren't told that. Yes, we were, implicitly. Whatever the documents of Vatican II actually said, they were not conveyed to the rest of us. And so we thought that everything had changed. It's kind of like having a borderline mother. You just don't know when and where you're going to step on a landmine. Are those who labor, who struggle to follow the teachings of the church, are they the ones who are, in fact, unwelcome? Does no one see that this becomes a question? Fortunately, though it is distressing indeed, I'm not that 16-year-old, and I have done a great deal, and I still have not scratched even the surface of the surface of listening to folks with more knowledge than me, and I've read a great deal, such that I know that I am responsible to praise, reverence, and obey God in order to be with him at the end of my life. And I struggle with it pretty much every minute. But I'm a grown-up now. I think I have an obligation to notice and to speak of the two confusing levels on which the synod seems to be proceeding. And without clarification, the two levels more and more seem to be mutually exclusive. We cannot both be conforming to the will of God. Can we? Both concepts, both levels? If we are, someone please explain how the two levels can be integrated in a way that does not completely change the Catholic Church. We already have cafeteria Catholics. Are we going to have a cafeteria church? What is this doublespeak but the language of the devil? Am I being too alarmist? You tell me. Well, this was kind of a hard episode to do because I know how hard all of life is. I'm going through it the same way everybody else is. And I certainly would prefer that my frailties be more, what's the word, tolerated by my fellow men and by God. Even though at heart I know that some of my frailties ought not to be tolerated. So, anyway, I leave it to you. And if you're enjoying this program, do tell your friends and family about it. This is just me trying to figure out what's going on around me, struggling at the age of, well, I won't say, to make the best life that I can so that I can be with God at the end of it. So you have a nice week. See you next week.